Welcome to a Monday edition of the Soccer Central podcast. I'm John Molinaro, chief soccer reporter for Sportsnet. Hope you all had an enjoyable weekend wherever you are across Canada, and that involved a lot of football watching. In my case, I was quite pleased to see my beloved Juventus beat Roma in a marquee Serie A matchup and stay top of the table. I'm flying solo today on the podcast as James Sharman is slacking off and has the day off, but he'll be back next week. In the meantime, we're going to review the weekend that was in the Premier League with our next guest. Alison Bender is a broadcaster and reporter based in London who covers the Premier League for ESPN and a number of other media outlets. Canadian TV viewers will probably recognize her from her many regular appearances on Sportsnet's matchday broadcast of the Premier League, usually as a sideline reporter at Stamford Bridge. She also hosts Premier League Fan Zone and the Premier League news programs that also air on the Sportsnet's channel of families. Alison has kindly taken time out of her busy schedule to talk to Soccer Central and joins us now on the line from London. Miss Bender, how are you?
Hi, John. Yeah, very good, thank you. Absolute pleasure to come on your podcast. So thanks for inviting me.
Well, thanks for coming on. We've been trying to get you on for a while, so this is really good of you to join us. Bit of an interesting day on Sunday at Stamford Bridge, as Chelsea solidified its top spot in the standings with a 2-0 win over Arsenal. Want to get your general thoughts on how the game played out.
Well, first of all, I have to say it was a sensational match. It didn't disappoint, because often you get these great build-ups, don't you, to matches like these, and sometimes they do disappoint. And particularly when it was 6-0, wasn't it, the last time it was Wenger's 1,000th game in charge. So I think all the build-up was focusing on this. And I actually went down the Fulham Road interviewing Chelsea fans for some of the work that I do on ESPN, and everyone was really excited, and people were telling me that they thought that there would be another 6-0 scoreline. And to be honest, I didn't think that it would be. I always knew it would be a lot tighter than that. But it was a really good contest, and there was just so much as well. I mean, I never like to see, you know, battles between managers and injuries and that kind of thing. But it does make for an exciting fallout, doesn't it? And it gives us something to talk about. And it's hard to know where to even begin. There are so many talking points. But I'll start with Diego Costa, because once again, sensational, another goal. He's just really hit the ground running. It's just been amazing. I always knew he would be a good signing, but I thought it might take him a little bit of time to adapt. But that's 9 goals now in 7 Premier League games, and we keep hearing that he's injured as well with hamstring problems. So you can't imagine what he'll be like when he's fully fit. But I've been utterly impressed with him. And then of course, John, the fallout between the managers. I don't know what you made of that.
Well, we'll get to that in a minute. A lot of people, I think, saw this as a chance for Arsenal to lay down a bit of a marker. Sorry, Arsenal, a bit of a chance to lay down a mark and remind Chelsea that they're not to be taken lightly and show that they're a serious title contender. But I don't know, how big of a psychological blow do you think this will be for the Gunners, this loss?
Huge. I think it will be absolutely huge. I think it'll be huge for Wenger as well, because right. He always has this running battle with Jose Mourinho, which, like you say, we'll get to in a moment. But, you know, it's 12 matches now. Mourinho's won 7, drawn 5, and Wenger's basically won none of them. You know, they have a bit of previous between them. But I think as a team as well, I think it will be a blow psychologically, because they know that this, you know, they spent, I think, what was it, 128 days at the top of the table last season, the most time of any club. And they blew it, and they knew it, and they always do badly against sort of supposed top 4 teams. And I think this was their chance to show, you know, obviously with the signing of Welbeck, and he was in great form after his England performance. I think they thought, this is a chance for us to show everyone what we're made of. Now, Cesc Fabregas, after the game, he was speaking, and he actually praised Arsenal. He said, I think he said in Europe, no, he said certainly in the Premier League, he says that they are the best team at that ball possession, and they're really hard to play against. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's the result that counts, and it was a 2-0 loss. And I think it will be a really big blow. And I think that Wenger wouldn't want to admit it. He was very short in his interview afterwards. And, you know, he said something along the lines of, congratulations, Chelsea, let's move on, or something like that. But, yeah, that will be a blow. I know he won't be happy about that result at all.
I know it's early, but, I mean, Chelsea is just looking to be in indomitable form. Is there a certain sense of inevitability about them winning this? Or, I mean, everyone keeps talking about...
A little bit.
Yeah?
A little little bit, but I mean, the thing about the Premier League is it's just so unpredictable, and you think you know everything. You know, it is only early days. We're only 7 matches in, and often we start talking about how we can start judging sort of who top of the table, say, come Christmas time. But it has to be said, Jose Mourinho's been planning for a couple of seasons for this season. I mean, last year he really knew that Chelsea had no chance. He knew that they didn't have a decent enough striker in Fernando Torres. And I think that in the back of his mind, he was working on his team for this season, and suddenly it's just come together. I mean, I was looking at it the other day, obviously during the match, and I was just thinking, this is such a great balanced squad. I mean, even, you know, holding on to Petr Cech was a phenomenal piece of business. Obviously, when he knew he was going to play number 2 to Courtois, he could have gone somewhere else. And obviously, with the injury to Courtois as well, you know, maybe Petr Cech is going to be called on a little bit more in certain situations. And so it's good to have a number 2 goalkeeper as experienced as Cech. But when you look at the whole field, really, I mean, the back 4 picks itself now, and it's solid. I mean, so many teams in the Premier League are still shuffling and not sure who their best team are. But when you've got that, you know, Spilicueta, John Terry, Cahill, Ivanovic across the back, and then obviously the 2 in front of them, Matic and Fabregas, looking sensational. And then the fact that they've got so much strength and depth that Mourinho can actually, he can either use Hazard, he can use Oscar, he can use Willian, he can use Schürrle. So many options. And then you've got Costa up front banging in the goals. You're right, there is a certain inevitability, I think. I mean, Manchester City are obviously going to be up there, and maybe Manchester United will improve. Arsenal still could have something to say, but it does look like it's Chelsea to lose, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you mentioned the Gunners there. I mean, are you a bit surprised at... I mean, it should be pointed out, I mean, they were undefeated coming into this contest. The bulk of those games were draws, though. But, I mean, this after a major outlay in the summer, I think a lot of people were just expecting more. Are you surprised that, I don't know, have they been underperforming, do you think?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting one, actually. You're right. So I was looking at the results, and there are a lot of draws in there as well. And they're actually a pretty decent-looking team. I mean, I was looking at a list of injuries that Arsene Wenger had only, I don't know, 10 days ago. And we were talking about 10, 11 major injuries to key players. And so actually, when they rolled out this team to face Chelsea, I thought, actually, you know what, this is a decent team. Most of them have recovered. I know that Koscielny and Mertesacker had sort of mini-injury scares, and Wilshere as well, but they were all back. And obviously, with the addition of Danny Welbeck up front, you know, Sanchez has started scoring now as well, and Ozil was fantastic last season. So you're looking at that team and you're thinking, you know, this is and Cazorla as well, forgetting so many attacking players. And as Cesc Fabregas was saying, this is a great team of attackers, a great team in ball possession. Perhaps there are a few problems in the back, perhaps the back 4, not necessarily as strong as it could be. But I think everyone knew this was going to be a tight contest. And I think, you know, it could have gone either way, to be honest. There were certain situations with, you know, some of the penalty shouts. I think in the end, the best team did win. But I do think over the course of the season, well, you asked me if they'd underperformed Arsenal so far. I think they're just finding their feet. I think they need to gel. But I do think they've got the players. Obviously, Arsene Wenger's finally put his hands in his pockets when he's spending. I know the fans were really disappointed because they wanted Falcao, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
But actually, to be honest, I don't think that Danny Welbeck is necessarily that worse than a Falcao signing. I know, obviously, Falcao is a massive marquee signing. But there are some people out there that even think that Welbeck may get more goals over the course of the season than Falcao does. He's finally getting his opportunity to play through the middle. He's not playing on the wing. He's not coming on as a substitute. It seems that Wenger is somewhat building the team around him a little. So, you know, maybe this could be a really, really shrewd signing. And I think, what was he, only 16 million or something?
Right.
Same price as Mario Balotelli. I think that was great business.
You mentioned it before, a lot of attention focused on the brief sideline skirmish between Jose Mourinho and Arsene Wenger. Has it become a bit of a sideshow now? I mean, do we in the media and the fans not make far too much of this? I mean, my goodness.
We do. But we love it as well. I mean, I remember going to the Carling Cup final in 2007. And, you know, it was a long-running battle between them even back then. I think they dubbed that the Snarling Cup final because all those players were sent off out of Adebayor Boré and Obi Mikel, and a manager that always sort of had a bit of a battle going on. Because I think one of the funny things was Mourinho calling Wenger a voyeur, which he really didn't like. And then obviously he said he's a specialist in failure, didn't he, Mourinho? And then Wenger said that Jose Mourinho's afraid to fail. So it's been kind of running on. I have to say, I was really surprised that Wenger pushed Mourinho the way he did.
Me too.
Maybe the replays made it look, you know, the slow-mos made it look worse than it was. But I would almost expect that coming from the other side. I would have expected Mourinho to give a push like that, but not Wenger. But it shows me that Mourinho's really got under his skin. I know that he crossed, you know, he went into the technical area of Mourinho and, you know, it's not really the dumb thing. But yeah, it gives us something to talk about, doesn't it? I know in this country, certainly in England, a lot of people have been talking recently about Mourinho not shaking the hands of managers. You know how he goes in the tunnel a bit too early?
Right.
And people have been talking about that being a bit disrespectful. I don't know what you think. I personally think that you should wait till the end of the game. I think it's something that all the managers do and should do. He says that he goes down the tunnel to speak to his wife, but I think that's a bit of a poor excuse because you've got, you know, you're in a professional setting, and I think that that is the time to do the things that all the other managers do. So, but we love talking about it, don't we? It gives us something to talk about.
No, absolutely. I just find that, like, at this point, I just wonder if it's a bit manufactured now because it's been going on for so long, and if they're not doing it just for the sake of, you know, it's great theater and it's not, has any sort of real purpose.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, and I think in a respect Mourinho knows what we expect of him.
Right.
I work a lot at Chelsea, as you said in the beginning, and I've worked very closely with Mourinho over the years, and it's interesting to kind of see him as a manager, the way he's changed, and it's quite sad in a way. I think he's changed ever since his time at Real Madrid, where the media really didn't like him and he didn't particularly like the media. And now he's a little bit more cagey with the media. He used to be a little friendlier, let's say. It was much easier to go up and speak to him and have a conversation. And I think now he kind of puts his head down, he gets the job done. And you get the impression that he doesn't really like the sideshow stuff anymore, whereas it was something that he used to really relish in his first couple of seasons at Chelsea. And I think the journalists loved that as well. It was part of the game. It was why people tuned in and why people loved seeing Mourinho, to see what he had to say and what fantastic sound bites and, you know, quotes that he made about eggs and horses and all kinds of crazy things. But yeah, he's sort of calmed down. He's tamed down a little now, hasn't he?
Yes, a fair bit, I would say. We're talking to Alison Bender here on the Soccer Central podcast. Manchester United coming off a big win over Everton with David De Gea and Angel Di Maria both putting in marvelous performances. This is two wins on the trot for the Red Devils. Do you get the sense that they're starting to turn the corner here, or is there a fair bit of work still to do?
Well, yes. It's interesting that you mentioned David De Gea there, because I think that, you know, you can sum up that word in one word, that game in one word, and it is De Gea. He was or two words, I suppose. He was sensational. And to be honest, if it wasn't for him, they could have been staring defeat in the face, because it was very nervy last moments. And so, you know, have they turned a corner? Well, I'm not sure if they have. I mean, I know that when they started off, I mean, it was a loss, wasn't it, at Old Trafford to Swansea at the beginning, and a draw with Sunderland, and then terrible, terrible Carling Cup, or Capital One Cup, I should say, the defeat to MK Dons. And I know Manchester United fans are just really, really worried. And then when they beat QPR, I think everyone said they'd turned a corner then. But then, of course, you remember there were still bad results to come, you know, the game against Leicester. So I think it's difficult to say, you know, is this a new Manchester United? But I certainly can see signs of hope. there's no doubt that attacking-wise, they've got some fantastic names, and I think Robin Van Persie and Falcao are starting to look like a really good partnership together. I still worry about their back four. Obviously, De Gea really helped them out in the game at the weekend against Everton, but I do think they're on the right track, and Louis van Gaal has always said that he needs time to make this make his changes. Obviously, starting with three at the back, he was able to adapt. And I do think, you know, it's only seven matches in. Obviously, you need to be able to hit the ground running in the Premier League, because there are no easy games, the rest games, because it's so physical. But I do think that perhaps, you know, the sort of the work rate that the managers put in training, I think they probably are turning a corner, you know, in some sense. So, yeah, I think Manchester United fans could have a little bit more to look forward to. And it's been a tough couple of weeks for them because, obviously, no Champions League football for them either.
Right.
So, they've only got this Premier League to focus on. And we're hearing maybe playing lucrative friendlies abroad, but I can't see that amounting to much either.
And it's interesting in those comments that, you know, one of the names that you did not mention was Wayne Rooney. Obviously suspended.
Yeah.
He's, you know, eventually the suspension will be over and he'll come back. But, I mean, I don't know. Does he go back right into the starting lineup? Do you think Van Gaal would consider dropping him?
I think he might. I mean, the one thing about Van Gaal is I'm actually reading a biography of his at the moment. It's really interesting to look back at his sort of 20 years, you know, what he's like as a manager and what he's able to do. And a couple of the trademarks of his, one is that he brings these players through. He's not afraid to give them a chance, like Paddy McNair. He brought something like seven players through into the first team, you know, in a time in Holland years ago. And I think he's not afraid to drop key players. Now, he spoke out about Wayne Rooney recently, saying that he doesn't necessarily think he's the best striker. He thinks that other people are better, like Falcao. But, you know, obviously he rates him as a player, but he's thinking, well, maybe I'll put him into the team elsewhere, where, you know, so maybe he'll play slightly deeper. Obviously, Wayne Rooney's going to want to play as the main man and, you know, do what he does best. But at the end of the day, the manager is very, very, he's a confident man. He knows what he wants and he's not afraid. So I think that, you know, Wayne Rooney getting suspended at this time is really bad timing for him because, you know, I actually think that yes, he is going to have to compete with the likes of Robin van Persie and Falcao. And I wonder whether Van Gaal might think, should I have made him captain so early on when this is perhaps a player that might well get dropped? It's certainly going to make interesting reading and it'll be really interesting to see how the season pans out for Wayne Rooney.
As we mentioned before, Diego Costa scored again on the weekend and he continues to take the league by storm. But I'm wondering about other newcomers to the Premier League. Who's sort of impressed you?
Well, there's so many. You mentioned Di Maria actually earlier and he's the one who's actually, yes, he's impressed me, but he's the one who I'm actually most excited about in terms of how I think he'll develop. It's worth pointing out that I suppose Real Madrid are my second team. I spent a couple of seasons over there in Spain following the team really closely and working for the club channel. So it's a team that means a lot to me. And I know that obviously Di Maria was instrumental in the 10th European Cup for Real Madrid. And he's certainly a player who I think will really blossom as time goes on. And, you know, it was a record £60 million deal. I know that one of the things that people talk about when players come to the Premier League is their physicality. And because he's such a lean guy, he's actually got a nickname, El Fideo, which means the noodle. And basically, you know, he can look a little bit lightweight at times, can't he? Just because of his physique. But, you know, he speaks about some of the other players that he looks up to, like David Silva and Eden Hazard, who've come into the Premier League and really, you know, held up really well. And he says, I'm not going to be put off by the physicality, and I think that I'll, you know, really adapt. I was reading some interesting stats, actually, and they were saying that in La Liga, Di Maria averaged only 1.3 tackles per game. Now, obviously, in the Premier League, it's so much more more physical than that. And I think the one thing that players always talk about is the fact that there are no rest games, whereas in La Liga, you can always guarantee that there's a few games that you'll hammer them 5 or 6-0 and you can take the foot off the gas. But I think in the Premier League, as they noticed against Leicester, the newcomers, you know, these are tough games, and against Burnley as well. So it's going to be tough, but I'm really looking forward to seeing Di Maria. He's impressed me so far. And I think he'll impress me some more as well. And when you look at the attacking players that he's got around him as well, he can only be impressive. I mean, those players are just great support, aren't they?
Yaya Touré has come in for some heavy criticism in recent weeks. I think many people have thought that hasn't been quite at top form, and there's even been a suggestion of his laziness on his part. Is this fair, Alison?
It could be fair, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because when a player's so good and perhaps overperforming as well, like he did, I mean, when Manchester City won the league a couple of seasons ago, he was probably sort of the player, or one, certainly one of. And so, yeah, it is right that he would be criticised if he's not living up to that level. Obviously, he finally scored at the weekend. It took him to the 82nd minute, but he did get on the score sheet. But he's hit back at the criticism, and he says, you know, it's not just about scoring. I'm a midfielder. I'm not here to score goals. Obviously, you know, because he was scoring so many before, I think there was that on his shoulders. But you're right, he's also been criticised for not being, not having the work rate, perhaps, in helping out his players. It has to be realised, though, that when there is changes in personnel, changes in systems and formations, it's obviously difficult for a player. And I also look at how hard he's worked, you know, going off to the African Cup of Nations as well. I mean, he'll be gone again January to February, and perhaps maybe Frank Lampard will be staying on, and that will be another interesting topic for discussion. Obviously, when he scored against Chelsea, I mean, it was inevitable, wasn't it? But I think the key thing is that both the manager and the players are backing him. Obviously, they have to. But sometimes managers do turn on the players. I mean, Manuel Pellegrini says he's working in the perfect way and he trusts him as well. And Zabaleta says that obviously they want to see a little more from him in terms of free kicks, in terms of passing, but you know, they have full confidence that he will return to the player that he was. I was looking at the ratings actually in the English newspapers here. They've given him a 7 out of 10, which is actually pretty generous for English papers in the last game. But you often get a bit of a notch higher if you scored. So perhaps that kind of covers up the kind of game that he had. But perhaps, you know, now that he's on the score sheet, that might add a little bit of confidence to him. We'll have to see in the coming matches.
And keeping with the theme of underperforming superstars, Mario Balotelli didn't start for Liverpool on the weekend.
How did I know you were going?
Yeah. Well, his place in the starting 11 was taken by Ricky Lambert. I don't know. Why do you think he's underwhelmed so far? And do you think this is a long-term sort of demotion for the Italian?
Well, I don't think it's a long-term demotion because of the attitude that he showed when he came on. I think everyone was expecting fireworks from Mario Balotelli, obviously. And, you know, there was this sort of good behaviour clause, and everyone was talking about him coming in. So I think there was a lot of expectation on his shoulders. I mean, Brendan Rodgers said quite publicly that he was not afraid to drop him. He said that he should be working a little harder. And, you know, he dropped him. He's only scored one goal since his move from AC Milan, and that was against Ludogorets. So, you know, Brendan Rodgers kind of said it was rotation, but I think that we all knew that everyone was expecting a little more from him. Unfortunately for Ricky Lambert, I mean, it was a bit of a childhood dream of his to start at Anfield, and he actually had a pretty poor game. It was his 550th league appearance. I mean, this guy's been going for a very long time. But he underwhelmed, really. And Balotelli came on, I think, after 60-odd minutes, and looked the better player. So I actually think that he, you know, could work his way back into Brendan Rodgers' plans, given the performance that he made. But, you know, when it's a superstar, when you paid a lot of money for him, you are expecting him to perform. Although 16 million, I actually think, was a pretty good bargain. And I think they'll get their money back from Balotelli. I think he will score goals, and I think he will be a key player for the season, certainly.
I think one of the, you know, the best surprises of the season so far has been the play of Saito Berahino for West Brom. Mm-hmm. I know he wasn't named to Roy Hodgson's roster for the upcoming European qualifiers, but has there been any talk of him possibly earning up an England call-up soon?
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about that here in England. I mean, he is a member of Gareth Southgate's under-21s, and I think that he was really hoping that he would be called up into that squad, and he actually has spoken about, you know, that is an aim of his. Unfortunately, he plays for a bit of an unfashionable club, you might say, and it is more difficult to get a call-up when you're playing for West Brom, but the boss, Alan Irvin, says he deserves a plaudit. He's done really well. It's worth pointing out as well that he's the top English scorer in the league so far, 5 goals. He's got a really great backstory as well. He escaped from Burundi aged 10 to avoid civil war. And, you know, players like him, you know, with great work rate, he really has impressed. And it wouldn't surprise me, actually, when you look at the forwards that Roy Hodgson's actually picked, Ricky Lambert, I think that Sahidou Berahino actually had the better game of the two. Wayne Rooney, obviously, and Danny Welbeck. You never know. Over time, he could find his way into the England squad, because certainly Roy Hodgson has been, you know, calling up players that are unexpected. So maybe he will get his call.
I think another surprising story, but a nice story too, has been Southampton, because I think a lot of people saw them as surefire relegation candidates after the fire sale of selling off so many top players in the summer. But there they are. I mean, near the top of the table. How do you account for this? Is this how much of this is down to Ronald Koeman, do you think?
Some, but I think he's picking up where Pochettino left off. I mean, Southampton's a great story, and I love the fact that their marketing slogan is "We March On," and they certainly have, and then some. I mean, they lost all these players, like five key players, really, really good players. All gone to good clubs as well. Obviously, Luke Shaw's gone off to Manchester United, and Lovren at Liverpool, Callum Chambers, Arsenal, Lallana. These were key, you know, players that were the spine of Southampton, and, you know, managed them to give them an eighth place finish last season. They were doing so well. And you're right, at the beginning of the season, everyone wrote them off. Everyone said they were absolutely going to collapse. I think it's really, really important to get in a manager that's going to attract big players. And when you've got a name like Ronald Koeman as well, I think that certainly made people sit up and think, OK, Southampton, that you might have called them a selling club, but when you get a manager like that in, and they have, they've done, you know, incredibly well. I mean, obviously they lost at the weekend. There was a lot of chat because it was Mauricio Pochettino welcoming back his old side, and incidentally the fans actually booed him, which was a real shame. And Ronald Koeman actually showed a lot of class, because he actually slammed his own fans, and he said, you know, you should give Pochettino a bit more respect. Because Pochettino, at the end of the day, did so much for them. And, you know, I think when you look at what's happened to Southampton, even over a longer period, like 5 years, they've moved something 66 places, I think, up the Football League, which is just sensational. And they've developed all these amazing young players that we see, you know, scattered around our Premier League. They're just a great club. But, yeah, I think you're right. Koeman's definitely got something to do with it. But Pochettino deserves a lot of respect as well.
And finally, former Spurs star Jermaine Defoe, obviously currently playing for Toronto FC in Major League Soccer, but he was nearly sold to QPR on the last day of the summer transfer window, and there was reportedly interest from Leicester City as well. How closely is he being followed by fans and media in England with regards to his MLS exploits?
Actually, it's interesting you say that, because I was thinking about him not so long ago, but I think that probably you follow his career a lot closer than we do these days. unfortunately, it's not so easy for us to follow the MLS over here. And you do hear sort of major headlines here and there, but certainly we haven't heard as much of him. And obviously, we heard about him on deadline day, because I think I read that he'd actually flown to England hoping to force a move. And I know that the president of FC Toronto came out with some quite blunt statements saying, you know, if he doesn't want to be here, he can get the hell out of here. Mm-hmm. It's disappointing. I think he's been an unlucky man, actually, when he was playing for Spurs as well. He wasn't really getting his opportunities. And every time he did come on as a substitute, he seemed to have a really good goal-to-minutes ratio. But he's been unfortunate that whenever he's played in the team, there's always been someone just ahead of him who's slightly better. But, you know, reading his stats, I was quite impressed. I mean, he joined early 2014, didn't he? He scored 11 goals in 16 games, which seems pretty good. So that sounds like he's having a good game. But all the things I read about him is that he's saying that he's disappointed that the level is perhaps not as big as he was expecting. And then obviously he's had injury problems as well, which is, you know, he's been plagued by injury for a long time. And I know that he was disappointed that Ryan Nelson was sacked as well. It wouldn't surprise me if he comes back to the Premier League at all. I still think he's got a lot to offer. Like, judging by those statistics, if he's managed to keep his fitness up and his level of football. But, you know, we always like to hear of players that go out to America and do well, and to Canada and do well. And, you know, it's good to see that he's scoring goals. But, yeah, not so good that he's upsetting managers and presidents.
No, and fans as well.
I can imagine.
Alison, before we let you go, maybe you can tell our listeners how they can check out some of your work online.
Yeah, definitely. Well, nowadays I actually use Twitter a lot. It took me a while to warm up to it, but now I love it. So I do tweet all the time. So if anyone wants to follow me on Twitter, my handle is @AliBenderTV. And I also do a weekly preview to the weekend Premier League matches on ESPN.com. So that's usually found on the website, ESPN.com. But yeah, definitely follow me on Twitter. I love hearing from the fans, and it's great, conversing with you guys as well, because I never get to see any of the stuff I do because it goes out abroad. So it's nice to know that someone's watching.
Oh, definitely. No, and you've got a lot of followers here in Canada. Listen, good stuff, Alison. Keep up the great work, and thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure. Thanks. Take care.
Just a reminder that there are no Premier League games this weekend due to the international break. But Sportsnet will have live coverage of the Euro 2006 qualifiers, with several marquee matchups each day from this Thursday until next Tuesday. Go to sportsnet.ca and consult the broadcast schedule for more information. And of course, James Sharman and I will be back next Monday with another edition of the Soccer Central podcast. Until then, cheers for listening.